From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Sandler Center for the Performing Arts in Virginia Beach, Virginia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It is great to be here in Virginia. It is such an exciting week to be in our business because, of course, as everybody knows, this week marked the beginning of the race for the vice presidential nomination. Now, as it so happens, we here at Wait, Wait have become a kind of informal vetting committee. Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania was on everybody's short list for VP, as is Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano. Both of them have been on our show recently. They came on to show they had the stamina to stay awake through something morbid and dull, a skill useful in attending funerals. So today, Virginia Senator Jim Webb, a possible Democratic vice presidential choice, will join us to play our game later on, because the road to the Naval Observatory goes through Carl Castle. But in the meantime, call us up for your own vetting. You can answer some questions about the week's news. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Nan from San Francisco.
Hey, Nan, how are things in San Francisco?
Beautiful.
Oh, you always say that, you San Franciscans. And yet it's true, I know. What do you
do
there?
I am a advertising copywriter, and I'm also a curatorial intern at SF MoMA.
SF MoMA?
San Francisco Museum of Modern Art.
I imagine that in San Francisco, the modern art is way modern.
Well, it is swinging.
It's swinging. That's good to hear. Well, welcome to our show, Nan. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author and the man to blame for everything you will find at Baudet.com, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Nan.
Hey, Tom.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, is Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, Roxanne.
Hello, Nan.
And finally, a humorist and author, most recently of P.J. O'Rourke on The Wealth of Nations, part of the Books That Changed the World series, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hello.
Hello.
So, Nan, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, of course, right here, is going to recreate for you three moments from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, and your very own home answering device, whatever that may be.
Okay.
Ready to play?
I am ready.
Here's your first quote.
I am absolutely certain that generations from now will be able to look back and tell our children that this was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow, and our planet began to heal.
That was someone announcing that he was the presidential nominee, and maybe a whole lot more. Who?
That would be Barack Obama.
It would be. He became the first African-American major party nominee for president in U.S. history. He celebrated the historic moment by speaking to a crowd of thousands in the same hall where the Republicans will have their convention later this year. And then, as a follow-up, he fed the masses assembled with a single power bar and half a bottle of vitamin water. Then he put a curse in the hall so that the Republicans, later in August, when they try to drop balloons from the ceiling, it will instead rain non-fat latte upon them.
And the Philistines shall flee.
And they shall rue the day that they doubted the power. Now, meanwhile, his rival, these last 6 months or more, Hillary Clinton, took her time admitting the inevitable. First, on that same night, she congratulated him, but refused to say for what exactly. Perhaps for being such a sharp dresser. We don't know. A few days later, though, she did announce that she was suspending, not ending, her campaign and would endorse Obama on Friday. She changed that to Saturday. Then suddenly, Hillary announced she wasn't quitting after all and was going to fight on to Denver and beyond. But that turned out to be just Bill wearing a pantsuit and a wig. So how do you guys feel about how all this ended? Can you believe it's over?
I'm so relieved.
Really?
Not me.
Really?
Not me, no. I mean, I lose a joke every time one of these people drops out, you know? Yeah. In the case of Hillary, I lose thousands.
I know. All that kicking around, you can't do anymore.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem fair.
I know. Yeah.
Well, I admired the column in the Washington Post this week by Ruth Marcus, comparing this to Lee's surrender to Grant at Appomattox and how generous Grant was in the terms. And Obama took that cue and has allowed Hillary's campaign staff to keep their sidearms and horses.
Yes. All right, very good, Nan. Here is your next quote.
It was Pavlovian, really, as if some handler had run him through his paces over and over, administering an electric shock each time he ended a sentence without revealing his dental work.
That was Gail Collins of the New York Times. She was reviewing the rhetorical performance of someone who also gave a speech on the same night as Obama's victory. So who tried to steal some of the limelight by flashing his dentures?
I think that would be John McCain in New Orleans.
It was, in fact. So somebody in the McCain campaign decided it would be a neat idea if McCain gave a speech on national TV on the same night as the greatest political orator of our day gave his history-making acceptance speech. That aide, we assume, is now applying Preparation H to his face to try to erase the savage bite marks left by the candidate. Now, the speech, a kind of a preemptive attack on Obama, looked decent on paper, but McCain got universally bad reviews for his weirdly robotic delivery, punctuated with strange and inopportune smiles in front of a sickly green background. It was all delivered to about 100 equally grumpy supporters. His campaign also got bad reviews for the McCain campaign slogan, "A Leader We Can Believe In." It's a blatant, vaguely authoritarian ripoff of Obama's "Change We Can Believe In." So the McCain campaign went to their second choice, "A Leader You Will Be Afraid to Tick Off." All right. We're going to leave politics behind, Nan, for your last quote. Carl, if you would.
I walked 47 miles of barbed wire. Used a cobra snake for a necktie. Got a brand new house on the roadside made out of some rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top made out of human skulls. Now come on, darling, let's take a little walk. Tell me, who do you love?
All right, Carl.
Yeah.
That dude rocks.
We're all fanning ourselves.
Yeah.
If any of you smoked, I'm sure you'd be holding up your lighters right now. So that was a big hit by a legendary and influential musician. He died this week at the age of 79. Who was it?
George Thorogood?
although the fact that you're giving Thorogood credit for that song is such an ironic tribute to this man's career. His other big hit song, this was a hint, was actually titled after himself. It was his own name.
Sam Cooke.
No, I'll just give you the answer. It's Bo Diddley.
Okay.
Bo Diddley died this week. He was born Elias Bates. He took the name Bo Diddley, and he invented one of the signature sounds of rock, but he never really got the credit or money he deserved for that. For example, he was forever banned after one appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. He went on live TV, and he played his own song rather than the country tune he was supposed to sing. Sullivan was furious, banned him forever. We imagine, true to form, that this week several dozen less talented white musicians are figuring out how to rip off his funeral. Carl, how did Nan do in our quiz?
Well enough, Peter. Nan had two correct answers, so Nan, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Fabulous.